This is What Goddesses Watch, a film and TV podcast that takes a divinely badass dive into the feminine on screen. With me, Soma Ghosh, film critic and editor of the Demented Goddess magazine. Welcome, goddesses. It's a chilly, misty, green, lush day out here on the borders of Wales outside my hut. I can see little green leaves uncurling and unfurling and feathery sprays of hawthorn blossom. We had 8 inches of snow recently up on the mountains. So we're still in that reflective, quiet phase, considering all that's gone past before we shoot into spring. So a perfect mood for today's episode, Mummy's Girl, Daddy's Girl, in which we're looking at two films looking at roots and inherited trauma that are also full of charm and love, perhaps rather surprisingly, given that intro. They are Four Daughters by Kauthar Benhania in UK cinemas now, and Bleeding Love by Emma Westenberg, which is out on the 12th of April, starring Ewan McGregor and his daughter Clara. Four Daughters also features a real mother and her real daughters. It is the story of Olfa Khamrouni and her daughters Gofraine, Rahma, Aya and Tasir, and how she loses her eldest daughters Gofraine and Rahma, and how they turn up in terrifying circumstances. It's a story of violence and abuse and love. It's also an internationally known, notorious story as the girls turn up as child brides or teenage brides of ISIS, made intimate and real and gentle by Benhania's, I'm not sure if you'd call it recreation, it's not quite a documentary. Loosely, you might call it a drama documentary, but it's more interesting, immediate and engrossing than any of the traditional tags you could put on it. And the first thing that we see is a group of women doing one of the most symbolic feminine acts. They are seated in front of mirrors, talking, smiling, laughing and putting on lipstick. And it seems that they are all actors, perhaps, in a green room. Certainly they are very much at ease. They're comrades of some sort. It seems to be creative comrades. And as they talk, it is not clear who is an actor and a non-actor. They are women sharing the space. And this is one way in which Benhania implicitly, just subtly, is reclaiming feminine space from the extremist men who have clamped down on what women can be. And it's part of trying to understand how these two young women who were not Islamic fundamentalists ended up where they ended up. And it's part of the humane and empathic way of storytelling that is gives us the means to reclaim our stories and raises questions about how we can tell very difficult stories about ourselves and to what extent we can ever be honest about ourselves, particularly within a family, and then placing that within the wider bowl, if you like, of national and racial trauma, all set in this little old hotel in Tunis and told through a framing of women that reminded me of a painting by the Indian artist Amritha Sher Gill, three women who adroitly also used lipstick and makeup to reclaim women's space and bodies. Here we have women mirroring each other, sometimes all wearing white, sometimes wearing black, as in a memorable and funny scene as they parade in burqa fashions on the top of the hotel roof. And the way that this story is told in the vein of documentaries that look at reclaiming and retelling stories like The Act of Killing is to really bring, it's told in the green rooms, as it were, in the setting up of trying to make a film about the disappearance of these girls, which is done with a small group of actors who are taking the place of the lost daughters and the real family themselves. The division between what is real and what is being remembered and what is being replayed by the actors, if you like, is conflated, but it's never confusing. It's an engrossing, intimate, moving film, more austere than her Oscar-nominated Man Who Sold His Skin, an ambitious, flashy, gorgeous film, but no less gripping and horrifying, though we are not shown the horror. So it's a very interesting approach to trauma and to how the mother, Alpha, and her surviving daughters, Aya and Tasir, can make sense of the upbringing, both of Alpha and what happened to her, being pushed into a marriage where rape on the wedding night was counseled by her sister to the man whom she married, and then how she passes on a desire for violence and for will, for the ability to assert will in some way, to her daughters. I mentioned that the story is very well known, and it would be interesting to consider the reactions of those viewers who recognise the icon of Arab cinema, Hend Sabri, who plays Alpha. Now, Alpha, who grew up defending her single mother and her sisters from predatory neighbours, has very little education. What scanty income she has, with which she can barely provide for her daughters, barely, often unable to feed her daughters at night. She's somebody who has a precarious relationship with wealth and security, who finds herself becoming a national celebrity, being on TV for negative reasons because of the sensation of her daughters being identified as being part of this ISIS compound that's targeted for destruction. And Benhania chooses not to show her meeting with this great star, Hend Sabri, who lives a life that is photographed by Vogue magazine. And it's an interesting creative decision that brings Hend Sabri apparently down to the same level, although you wonder how it must also have boosted Alpha and her daughters to feel that their story is being told by this woman. Indeed, she plays Alpha alongside Alpha, and she acts as a foil to Alpha and as an intermediary sometimes between Alpha and Aya and Tasir, challenging
Alpha's attitudes towards her daughters and the savage language that she, full of love and need and attachment, also uses towards her daughters. So Alpha herself would be aware that she's creating this work, as well as her daughters, with this massive star. So I just want to applaud for a moment the tremendous achievement of Benhania in how she brings this group together, and in using trained actors, not as actors, but if you like, as comrades, as people who are workshopping this story, which is of course a real story. There's a revelation here, a querying about how we tell our stories, and how sometimes we need other people to talk to in order to construct these stories, but we also need other people around, perhaps with particularly with families, to disrupt the stories that are being forced onto us. Do you know what I mean? You know how you often feel that your mother or sister or father or whoever doesn't really see you as you feel yourself to be. They have their own story of you, and that's it. They simply use you, as it were, and that's the way I see it anyway, to further their own story. But that process is disrupted when you've got other people who are coming in. And now that time has passed since watching this film, the more I reflect upon it, the more I think how destructive this codependency between Alpha and her daughters is. Indeed, as codependency often will work out to be, warm, addictive, but suffocating, controlling, unfair, and ultimately really more about how one individual sees things, and that either affirming the way that the other individual sees things, or that person's point of view eclipsing the one who is more subjugated. And of course, it also, this mother-daughter codependency, it also is ruinous for the mother. But it's also a story of sisterhood and how to approach this intimacy when the two elder sisters are missing. Instead of imposing a third person narrative point of view, Benhania and her actors take a very playful approach. So we see the sisters in their closeness, whether it's games they play or flagellation, a religious punishment. We don't ever find out why and how the elder daughters, not really the facts of it, were compelled towards ever more punitive piety and ISIS. So because there's this gap, because Gofraine and Rahma are not themselves there, because their duplicate actors are following instructions from the sisters who were much younger at the time, how does Benhania cope with this gap? She tells their story visually and playfully and through fashion. So the phases that the sisters, the older sisters, go through of rebellious rock goth to orthodox Islamic hijab hint at two equally, if you like, passionate, furious, possibly dangerous inner states. And at other times, the four sisters, the four figures, quietly mirror each other in white or black. There's a deliberate simplicity to these compositions, and they seem almost like very human, very real archetypes of Greek tragedy. And when they're demonstrating a fashion show in hijab, there's a burqa humour, which again disrupts any potential solemnity about women being shut down, and does what Benhania does throughout, which is to try and create a space where the inner feelings of the women can arise. And all of this is done in a way which is unsentimental. It would be so easy to be sentimental. There's only one man in the cast who plays various shiftless men in the story. And so again, there's a dominant space of women, but it's something that feels entirely natural. In fact, the naturalness itself is part of what is so moving, so disarming, so upsetting when we hear about violence from men, when we hear about the rage of Ulfa against her own daughters and the shocking ways in which that manifests. This is exciting cinema turned in on itself, commenting on itself, where the form comments on the roles we play in families and how unknowable is the whole of a person, the whole of your daughter, your sister, your mother. In fact, as culture is becoming more and more aware, and has always, there's always been this questioning from back to Hamlet and before, identity is friable, it's changeable. And here I felt ultimately that's a hopeful thing, particularly when the two younger daughters get away from their mother and are relieved at the consistent security and education of an institution, which is not a situation which you would have imagined would give them a space for identity that was enjoyable. Whether Ulfa learns anything from the process, please watch it and let me know what you think on Instagram and What Goddesses Watch. There is a triumph of tone here as well. The way that the film blends love and hatred, playfulness and despair, and remains honest throughout. So it's a 4.8 goddesses for me. Not five, only because I really wanted to know more about the older sisters, why they did what they did, and I felt that the mother's story slightly overwhelmed the story of the daughters. I don't know what 0.8 of a goddess is, a semi-goddess, a demi-goddess, a witch, a super powerful witch. But it's wonderful, a wonderful piece of filmmaking, and do go and see it if you can. Don't be put off by the artwork. I don't know, maybe you're not as picky as me, which is all sort of, you know, four women entangled, dreamy, all that kind of, ooh, the blissful feminine crap. It's far more full of conflict and eye-opening inquiry than that. And now onto a film that, if you're feeling a little bit low about your dad, maybe you're missing him, maybe he's passed away, maybe there's trouble between you, you can go and see this film, and it's like getting a gentle fatherly hug along with some pretty visuals. The gentle fatherly hug is from Ewan McGregor. Who wouldn't want those turquoise eyes and sandy, bristly colouring to be enwrapped by those, and that lovely voice, who's in this film with his daughter, Clara McGregor. And I realise that for many people, that in itself is a selling point. For me, I wondered whether it actually stopped them from going deeper into the material than they might otherwise have done. However, this is a warm, sweet story with some raw energy, about a father who has scooped up his estranged daughter from a hospital where she is just had her life saved, or she almost died from an overdose. And he himself, an addict, is driving her across the desert to San Diego. So here we have two people in a car movie, and it has the picaresque charms of a Thelma and Louise. So by picaresque, of course, I mean little stories that occur, characters they meet along the way. And these are other itinerants and dropouts with dreams. And they bring an interest to the film, an emotion to the film, which is interesting in how it sort of mirrors in its loose drive, the loose night or many nights that one might experience as a hedonist. And then, of course, as things get darker and you move towards addiction and blackouts, a similar type of process occurs where you find yourself in one scene and one place with people you're not quite sure how you got there, and the sense of safety starts to ebb away. However, this is a film of beauty, of turquoises, pinks and tangerines, and really making the most of that vast landscape. And they're on their drive to San Diego. I think, as I recall, there's a play I remember very well reading by David Grieg about San Diego and about the number of children who go missing around San Diego being one of the highest proportionally in terms of missing children in the USA. Anyway, that's just by the by. It doesn't come into the film, although perhaps it should, because for me, ultimately, there was a bit of a lack of depth and precariousness, considering how alarming the situation can become when, once again, you realise that you're trapped in addiction, although you're telling yourself, you're telling your father that you're not. As for the performances, I was, of course, expecting a lot. That's how the film is billed. It is a two-hander with not only a real father and daughter, but a very talented actor. I couldn't believe recently realising that Ewan McGregor has he won a Golden Globe for his wonderful portrayal of two brothers in Fargo. Much deserved and super fun performance there. I couldn't believe he hasn't won an Oscar. I mean, I think Oscars are ridiculous, but because they're just generally so kind of showy and political. But you also feel that great British actors, and I do think he is a great actor, they generally have to get an Oscar at some point, kind of just to make the Oscars look good, just make the Oscars look like, yeah, we're really serious about acting. So, you know, we got to have one of the British guys to show how serious we are. Anyway, sidetrack. Ewan here is, he plays his role in a patient, he has a very patient approach to what he's creating here. It is understated, he's holding down his emotions, and Clara is portraying a character who is in a nervous state of denial with an appealing sweetness and openness to whatever comes. And she's lucky in her genetic inheritance from the Greek French side of her mother's family in terms of how she looks, which is a bit like a Bambi on speed. However, when it comes to the pivotal confrontation, I found the things between them a bit samey throughout. I felt that perhaps the scene was improvised, which I'm totally up for, which is great. But I don't know how far the director was able to influence these two actors to destabilize their bond, maybe get into darker places. Everything was played at one pitch, whether they were in the car or during the confrontation. And the part of the movie that is not played at any kind of predictable pitch is this wonderful psychedelic bliss of drink, drugs, and the transcendent instinct behind them. And I wondered what it would be like if the director had gone far more in that direction, if she had dramatized those questions of why we drink and take drugs to destruction. Imagine a film where you see a father and daughter really getting into that, not necessarily through taking drugs, but getting into a wild transcendent space together and really disrupting what it is to be a father, what it is to be a daughter. But this is a more traditional film. This is about father and daughter who are parted, and you want to see daddy rescuing his little girl, because sometimes you do. Sometimes we all need a hug. Sometimes we all need to come back to certainty. So if you're looking for a film that's about an intimate human drama with some psychedelic gorgeous bits in the desert, this might tick your box. For me, it is a solid 3 goddesses. And if you, the goddesses listening and watching, would like to give us your rating, comment on my points of view, or join in the debate, then please reply to posts at our Twitter account, Goddess Demented. This episode of What Goddesses Watch was produced by Soma Ghosh with music by Penelope Traps. We don't interrupt your listening pleasure with advertising, but we'd love you to join us as a patron. If you enjoy this episode and you want us to make more podcasts about films by and about women, then go to patreon.com/whatgoddesseswatch. That's patreon.com/whatgoddesseswatch, and support us from £1.99 a month, or if you're listening on RSS.com, hit the donate button now.